side, as 50% of the world's population and 52% of eligible U.S. voters, women are not a special interest group, and every woman should work and vote toward nothing less than 50-50 participation in the social, political, economic, and environmental arenas. The views and opinions expressed on Every Woman are those of the hosts and guests and do not necessarily represent those of KKFI, Midcoast Radio Project Incorporated, staff, volunteers, board, or management. And we're here in the studio today. Ebony has some guests that she's going to tell us about.
Yes, we have Natasha Rhea Elskari and her son Nazir Elskari in the studio with us for the first segment, talking about their unique relationship as mother and son. And then in our second segment, we'll bring up Jonah Lowther. Did I mess that up, Jonah? Jonah Lowther. We'll continue talking about intergenerational conversations and the power and importance of those, and specifically with the Generation Exchange Program. So,
and Ebony, you have some news for us today.
I do have a bit of news.
Give me one.
The rate of Americans ending their own lives has risen to its highest level in decades, according to a new study from the Centers for Disease Control, and the increase is especially pronounced among women. The age-adjusted suicide rate increased by 24% between 1999 and 2014, according to the CDC report. While men are still more than three times more likely to commit suicide than women, the suicide rate for women increased more than for men. The age-adjusted suicide rate for women increased by 45%, while the rate for men increased by 16%. The suicide rate increased for women of all ages, but the spike was especially pronounced for women aged 45 to 64. Poisoning was the most common method of suicide for women in 2014. While firearms were the most common method for men. Time reported April 22nd. Tourist found dead, video cameras filming under skirts, an attempt to take a woman's underwear amid suicide, and a, quote, pandemic of femicide, all in Mexico. For these reasons and many others, a group of women in Mexico is organizing a statewide day of action against sexual violence. Nos queremos vivas. We want to stay alive. We'll set off a march through the state of Mexico on April 24th. Several women's rights groups have signed on to the campaign, many via images shared on social media with the hashtag #Pound24A or #NosCorrimosVivas. One image shared, "One day I won't be scared to walk down the street. I won't be scared to die because of your machoism." PRR reported April 23rd. And that is the news for today.
Yes, I'd like to make a comment about the firearms versus poison. My first thought was that men choose firearms because they've never had to clean up a mess.
I was thinking the same thing. Aren't women always tidy? We're even considerate in our own death.
Yes. And we are going to get into our first conversation, but Natasha, I first want to say a bit about you as a writer, a poet, an academic, in addition to your role as motherhood, which is why you're here today. But Natasha has been a Cave Common Fellow, a 2016 Ragdale Residency recipient, and an educator for over a decade. Her poetry, academic papers, and personal essays have been published in anthologies, literary, and online journals. She has opened for and introduced many great writers, singers, and activists, and has been featured at a host of universities and venues nationwide. Once asked in an interview what makes her unique, she replied, quote, "Most people lie to themselves, but I like to reveal myself," end quote. And I'd like to leave it there because I, as her son Nazir is giving her props for that.
I'd like to transition on that note, Natasha, so you can. I met, first of all, I'll say for our listening audience, I met Natasha at a Gilded and Arts Forum, and she was talking about her work as a poet, and she made a comment about friends considering her relationship with her son very unique, and her parent's style of no subject untouched, no punishment for being honest, and just very direct and open and honest communication that a lot of people are not comfortable with or not used to growing up, especially, I know in particular, for myself, no subject untouched is definitely a little bit different. So can you talk with us, Natasha, about why you approach parenting the way you do and what your approach is?
Absolutely. Yesterday, I threw a Prince party. And I was talking with my friends about one of my awesome memories with my own mother, and that was viewing Purple Rain with her at the age of 8. Mm-hmm. And after the erotic scene with Prince and Apollonia, my mother turned to me and said, "Now, do you have any questions that I need to answer for you?" And I said, "Wow. No, I'm good, thank you. I'm just on fire right now." I have to say that I grew up, this is not something that is new, I grew up in an all-female household, and I think, you know, having an older sister and a mother, I just grew up in that same environment, that even though my mother was from the South and raised conservatively, she just did not approach her parenting that way. And she later shared that, of course, we asked and said things that completely threw her for a loop. But as a child, we just, you know, she answered our questions. And if she didn't know the answer, she would try to send us to the right direction. So I grew up around being able to express myself. Mm-hmm. I was close to my grandparents and a few of my aunts and uncles as well. And so I just didn't grow up with this idea that women needed to be hushed. Mm-hmm. You needed to be in control, but you could kind of say what you wanted to if you followed the rules a little bit. So, and so that, I think, where that came from. So when I was, you know, when my ex-husband and I decided to start our own family, he grew up a little different than I did, and I just said, hey, we need to sit down and really talk about what it is that we want to do and as far as parenting. And I knew that more than anything, I wanted my children or child to love being exactly who they were. Mm-hmm. And I wanted them to feel like they could come to me about anything, because life throws you all kinds of stuff. And the last thing we need to do, I think the term we call it now is shaming. Yeah. But I think with parenting, it's guilting. Mm-hmm. You know, you guilt your children for everything that they do that's outside of what you would do or mm-hmm. how you think or whatever. And I just was more interested in raising interesting adults than children.
Yeah.
I always looked at my children as these are going to be people who are out in the world. They're not just for me. They're not for me to place my fears and insecurities and dreams and hopes in. I need to be living my own dreams and hopes while raising them. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a mistake that a lot of people make. You know, they want to fix their lives onto their children, and that's not why they're here.
Yeah. You know,
they're here to live their own amazing existence, and we get the stretch marks to prove it.
Yeah. Yeah. Nasir, do you want to comment on your experience with your mom approaching motherhood and parenthood that way and how that's impacted you, and maybe share some of your stories with your friends and if it's different and or the same?
Yeah, actually, when she says that she let me be 100% who I was, that is very true. I look back now on some of my school pictures and ask her repeatedly why she let me walk out the house like that. you know, it's been amazing to be able to just go to my mom and kind of tell her about anything, about any situation. You know, we were mentioning before the show started, you know, we would have early morning talks every morning, and we still do today. And it's kind of like that breath of fresh air when you walk out the house. And it's like, you know, I'm ready for the day. I'm ready to get going. You know, we had a good little talk, and now we're getting ready to go. And with my friends, you know, she's a mother to everybody. You know, it's not just me that I get to be 100% who I am. But, you know, anybody that walks into our house, you know, and that we communicate with, they can be 100% who they are, too. So, you know, that no taboo living is fantastic because you kind of just get to be free and get to experiment. I mean, I've done a range of things that, you know, most parents, you know, wouldn't let your children do because it's like, you know, that costs money or you're not really into it. But, you know, she let me kind of experiment with what I wanted to experiment with and see what I really wanted to do and be in all these activities and, you know, make me a more rounded, well-rounded person. Because I don't think that if I didn't have a lot of the opportunities that I did, that I would be a whole and complete, well-rounded guy that I am now. So it's been great.
Yeah. Now, Natasha, what about some of the subjects that you may have been, if you have, been uncomfortable with? Just being a mom and talking with your son, is there no subject that you're uncomfortable with at all?
I feel like it's not. I mean, we recently had a discussion about something that was going on in my life. Mm-hmm. And I have always been incredibly unapologetic. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we also have my daughter who refused to come on the radio. She refuses. She's more introverted. Mm-hmm. She doesn't like to answer questions about her life.
Yeah.
So she has a very different take on having a mother like me, which I think is super awesome because it's taken her a while to adjust. Like, man, how did I get this mom? But one of the things that I always tell her is, you got this mom because I'm exactly the woman that can raise you to be amazing. And she never believed me, but now it's like that thing that comes on. She's 12, and she's thinking, oh, I see it. Mm-hmm. You know, as she kind of starts having her friends and realizing, you know, she knows so much more about her body. She knows so much more about the truth of things. Mm-hmm. And then she's like, whoa, people can't even say certain things with their mom. So I don't know if I answered that question, but an uncomfortable situation. No, I don't think not with Nazir, because we've always been talkers and we've always, I don't think it's ever anything that I haven't been truthful with you about. You know, when he was younger, he had this little thing with sticky fingers, you know, sometimes. and it would be things like magnets. And so instead of, you know, I would just say, okay, tell me what you think about before you take a magnet from something in the school or, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I would say, so when you make that decision, what do you think? You know, and I just would ask him, like, where his head was when he did the kinds of things that little kids do. So, yeah, it really hasn't been anything because he's so free-spirited. Sometimes he'll just, you know, he says what's on his mind, and it just doesn't, I don't feel embarrassed or ashamed because I would rather him come to me than to get some information from, like, his friends.
Mm-hmm.
You know, oh, my God, that would be horrifying.
Would
it's kind of like when you go to college and everyone starts arching each other's eyebrows and you think, please take it. Go to a professional. Stop that immediately. You know, and when I got to college, I was there with all of these 18-year-old women who knew nothing about their bodies, about dating, about sexually transmitted diseases, about how to be safe at a party. I was like, oh, my gosh. Mm-hmm. And their parents had degrees and, you know, were highly professional. And I was like, and they haven't even raised you. You're here and you're clueless. You could do things that could end up really impacting you for the future. And so I just didn't want that. You know, I didn't want that for my children. And it has not been popular. At first, I think people thought, who is this black woman who lets her kid wear a red Power Ranger outfit every weekend? And, you know, I didn't dress him up. I let him put on his own clothes. And I would say, oh, tell me about your outfit. And he would say, well, this shirt feels so good on my body.
Yeah.
And these shorts feel so good on my body. Like, he dressed based on how stuff felt.
Yeah.
And it was a travesty. It was a fashion travesty. But he was so happy and comfortable. And I was like, you know, he'll come into his own. I mean, he'll figure out. And every time he puts on clothes, he just, like, feels good in his body. People used to say, oh, you're skinny. And I would say, oh, no, son, you're slim. Mm-hmm. And it's beautiful to be slim. I was like, runners are slim. Mm-hmm. People who do yoga, they're slim. Mm-hmm. We're all different things. So yeah. I just was in constant protection of his self-esteem, mm-hmm. Of his spiritual values. And I just didn't let anybody tell me what to do. I parent from an intuitive place. Mm-hmm. Nazir needs something very different than what my daughter needs. Mm-hmm. And I don't parent them the same mm-hmm. at all because they require different things.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a good point that you make because sometimes I know my siblings and I have had the conversation of, well, how did my father pass when I was 2 years old? So it was pretty much my mom. And we've had conversations of, well, how my mother was with me versus how she was with my older sister. And then the conversations of, well, I would, you know, my older sister thinks there was a little bit more sternish behavior with her because she was the first and oldest. But some of the things that we've discussed as well as, but we're different. So she can't be the exact same with all of us because each of us are different. Yeah. You know, some baseline things, you know, I think it's important to say, okay, some baseline things should be common ground. But as far as maybe some of the nuances and the approaches, they will be different because each child is, you know, has their own personality and you naturally respond differently.
Mm-hmm. Yes. You want to say something about that?
I was just saying, I remember when Naima was younger and she had such a hard time completing homework. Mm-hmm. And so we would make a big deal out of it and like it'd be gifts and money given out for doing homework. And I remember I was like, man, I do my homework every night. Where's my $20 at? But it's just like, you know, I never needed that to push me to finish homework.
Yeah.
You know, you understand that, you know, she just needs a little bit extra motivation to get stuff complete, whereas I don't necessarily need that. And then it's kind of like, oh, well, it's fine. Well, I'm getting my homework done, so it's okay.
Yeah.
But stuff like that, like, you know, recognizing those different needs and being okay with that. And I don't think Naima necessarily recognizes that because she's younger mm-hmm. and she's kind of like, well, he's getting more than I am right now. But it's like, you know, I'm getting ready to go to college. Mm-hmm. Like there's a lot more that, you know, needs to be done on this end of it than it does right now while she's, you know, in middle school, even mm-hmm. though she does get a lot as well. So it just depends on how you look at it. So
I think that's a really good lead in because, you know, when we think about what we're giving each child, mm-hmm. And my daughter was a very different student, is a very different student. She's a very different thinker. Mm-hmm. Nazir is logical, sequential, and she's global. So, you know, I would say, okay, you know, your job is to line up the shoes. We don't wear shoes in our house. And he would line them up by height, color, and whose shoes they belong to, right?
Mm-hmm.
And when he was that age. And she would intermingle all the shoes. Oh, yeah. They were never paired, you know. Yeah. And I would look at that and I would say, good job, because I just said line up the shoes. I didn't say put them together. And it really taught me a lot on how differently they think from each other. So Nazir would like come to me because I also raised other children outside of my own biological children. Mm-hmm. When Nazir was right before he was two, my ex-husband and I adopted his sister mm-hmm. and she was 16. And so I had very little time just with he and I. And then when my sister passed away, my mom and I adopted my nephew. And so we've always had other children in our lives that were not related to us. And I was still very protective of our relationship as well, like wanting to him to feel. Did you feel like you were still, you know, important?
No, definitely. And even today, we still do that now. Like, you know, when we haven't seen each other in a while, we're like, oh, we need our mother-son date. And she'll go mm-hmm. out with Naima to go get, you know, makeup and stuff like mm-hmm. that. Like, we still have those little things that, you know, again, are different for both of us. Like, I don't necessarily need to go out and get a new outfit, but, you know, just go out and get dinner. Like, that's fine with me. Whereas mm-hmm. Naima, you know, we need some makeup or something like that. Mm-hmm. Like, something like glamorous. But even then, you know, it's still about feeding that need and not necessarily feeling important. Because we know we're important, but just, you know, having that individual time that we may not always get, and it's fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Your conversation makes me think of, we had a guest maybe about a month ago now. We were talking about peace, but at the beginning, offside, off-bar conversation, conversation, we talked about the Republicans. It was at this point where Donald Trump and Ted Cruz were talking about each other's wives, like the kind of wife thing that was going on. And the guest at that time said that they needed to be mothered. And I really kind of, you know, he just said it, you know, and this was before the show aired, but I really kind of thought about that. And as we see with Black Lives Matter and different things that are going on with our young men, especially in the African American communities, and just what may be different approaches to parenting and, you know, in that relationship, maybe we need to consider some different things, as you mentioned, Natasha, going to college and having some girlfriends that didn't know anything about their bodies or did, you know, and in certain subjects that I think we can be very uncomfortable talking about, whether it's our sexuality or, like you're saying, how you feel about a thing. Some things we don't understand, like, well, just don't do it just because I said so. And, you know, and as a child, you know, we can feel very cut off. And then I think kind of as an adult, we can feel very, I don't have the answer to that, and I'm afraid to get into it, or maybe afraid of what I will look like because maybe I should know because I'm the parent. But maybe not. You know, I think maybe as you allow your son to be human, that's a part of you allowing your own self to be human as well.
Yes, I do believe that there have been times I've said to you, I just don't have the answer, but this is what I think right now. I've also, he's asked me things, and I'll say, I need to think about this. So if I can share one of the things, he wanted to go out once, and it was 10:43. And he had done several things, had spent some time with my mom, and he was wanting to go out. And I was like, I don't think I want you to go out.
Yeah.
And the question was, why not? And I was like, because it's 10:43. And then he said, but I would have already been out if I hadn't spent time with family, if I hadn't taken care of these things you asked me to do, and now I would like to go out. And, you know, we have a multi-generational home. And so, of course, my mother is like, you can't let him go out. And I just said, give me some time to think about it. And I thought about it. And I was like, what is this about? What is this about for you, Natasha? And it's about this thing.